that we are in the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Halkomelem-speaking peoples, the Tawasin, and the Musqueam. When I say traditional, what I mean by that is that this area was inhabited by the Halkomelem-speaking peoples, used for habitation, hunting, fishing, ceremony, and trade. When I say ancestral, I mean this is where the ancestors of those people come from. This land was home from generation to generation, and for longer than Western civilization can imagine. And by unceded, I mean that the legal title still belongs to the indigenous nations of this land. This land was never ceded through treaty, war, or surrender. I'm really emotional this morning. In part, it's probably because I didn't take a weekend. So I'm on day 7 of working in my leadership in the church. Yesterday, I attended the memorial service for Jack Best, who was husband to Marion Best, former moderator of the United Church of Canada and former vice moderator of the World Council of Churches. And if you knew Marion and Jack, you would know that he was the support beneath her that allowed her to give herself in love to the church and to the world. And I did my PhD in Berkeley during the whole period that the TRC process was happening in Canada. And so for me as an Indigenous woman to leave the country for 8 years and come back, and the world has changed. Racism hasn't gone away, but the role that the church is playing in trying to talk about reconciliation and the ways in which we are adopting it into our liturgy is marked. And it's probably been a gradual transformation for people who have been in the pews Sunday after Sunday. But I have to say, Maggie, when the way that you did the territorial acknowledgement, the way that you do it here at Gilmar Park, brought me to tears. And that's why it's important for the church to do it, because there may not be that many Indigenous people in our churches, especially here in BC, but yeah, it took me by surprise. I think that in part with the emotional day I had yesterday. When I told my colleague Jim Hatherley, who's our director of community ministry, that I was coming to preach on Palm Sunday about our relationship to the land, he said, "Oh boy, how are you going to wrap your head around that one?" But as an Indigenous woman and as an environmentalist, it's at the heart of where I believe we're called to at this time as human beings, to imagine our relationship with each other and with the land differently. I did my PhD in interdisciplinary studies, and I actually, that was a good intro that you referenced, my PhD work, because I actually looked at the ways that traditional Indigenous worldviews and traditional Western worldviews are different, and the way that our faith could be shaped differently if we were more flexible and inclusive, like our traditional cultures used to be before contact. So it's my deep and profound pleasure to preach this morning about land and our relationship to it. My first or second year of my theological studies, when I was training for ministry, I preached at your neighboring church, South Army United Church, for Theological Education Sunday. I'm sure you have had students preach here over the years, or every year. And I had just read a book by a German theologian named Jürgen Moltmann. He was a political theologian writing from the context of a post-World War II Germany, and the book was called The Crucified God. Those poor, patient folks at South Arm, bless their hearts, they listened to me go on about this book, probably reading lengthy quotes, and by lengthy, I mean half pages or so. And by on, I think my sermon was at least a good 45 minutes. My mother sat fuming in the back of the congregation, having been raised in a traditional United Church home where services rarely, if ever, and only for exceptional reasons, breached the 60-minute mark. We joke now, she and I, that there's a fine line between a long sermon and a hostage situation. And I promise not to do that to you today. But this book, one I still think of every time I reflect on how we as humans are living up to the disciplines of the life in community to which we are called by God, this book was profound. It is profound. Basically, in a couple of sentences, Moltmann was saying, every time that we fail to take political action, corporate, collective, social action to ease oppression and suffering, we are re-crucifying the Christ. We are forgetting that lesson, and we are doing it over and over. That Jesus of Nazareth became the Christ, accepted the brokenness to his frail human body, so that we might be liberated from fear and death. His triumphant entry was a prerequisite celebration to this act of atonement between God and humanity. We were and are about to be shown the way, to be able to be atoned to or at one with God. What I love about Lent, Palm Sunday, Passion Sunday, and Easter is that we're really called to rumble with the word. There are no easy answers. It is a time of deep reflection, of committing or recommitting to be in right relationship with God, with each other, and with the earth. And we need to rumble. We need to get vulnerable and to open ourselves in curious ways to engaging with our own human fallibility in the safety of God's embrace, knowing as we do that as an Easter people who believe in the hope of the risen Christ, that there is always the possibility of resurrection and renewal on the horizon, none more so than in Holy Week. But if it was just about that, if it was just about the resurrection and happy endings, we wouldn't spend 40 days in the desert. We wouldn't have to sit with the pain of the crucifixion that comes this Friday, and the unknowing that happens as we sit in uncertainty on Holy Saturday. It is complex. It is messy. In part because that human fallibility, in that human fallibility, we often make a mess of things, whether willfully, unwittingly, or despite our best intentions. And humans, as evolved as we are, we don't like mess. Western philosophy in general likes to put things in neat, tidy boxes, to rationalize positions in our understanding of truth. Of course, not everyone on the planet comes from European origins, but thanks to trading ships, the colonizing drive of royalty and government starting in the 15th century, and especially the global conquest of the British Empire, none of us are exempt from that influence. There are three concepts that I believe have impacted our relationship with each other and with the earth in a way that does not allow us to be in right relationship with each other or with the earth to the best of our ability. But they are so deeply ingrained in our approach to life that they're hard to parse out. The first is that we like to put things in categories, preferably hierarchical. From taxonomies of the species of all living things to taxonomies of race in humans. After the Enlightenment, the desire to classify and rank drove scientists of all stripes to try and define the order of things. That's generally what we get taught in school. And it's romantic and tempting to think of big predators and humans as the most important species. Those earlier scientists might have understood that microbes had an important role to play in, say, making beer, but we're only now coming to understand the ways in which they also clean and shape entire ecosystems in the environment. So we haven't cared about it before, and in an age of data overload, it's hard to care about it now. You may have heard or read that scientists now believe we are on our way into the sixth mass extinction that we can identify in the history of the planet. While the extinction started just after the last ice age, about 12,000 years ago, it's still just ramping up. We are losing all forms of life at an unprecedented rate, and the primary forces identified by scientists can all be linked to human impacts on the environment, starting that 12,000 years ago. And climate change is amplifying the effects of overpopulation and overconsumption. 97% of the world's climate scientists agree that anthropogenic climate change is happening at a rate that now threatens our species, as well as the many others we have already impacted. Anthropogenic means that climate change is human in origin. And yet, we're only just now beginning in Canada to see a shift where when we talk about climate change, you've often heard, well, to be fair, you have to hear both sides of the debate. That's a fallacy we tell ourselves that is driven by corporate lobby interests and not facts. Why is it when 97% of scientists agree that we often, especially in the United States, but also in Canada, see equal airtime for both sides, as if that 3% that dissents is representative of 50%. That brings me to both the second and third concepts from Western civilization that is affecting our judgment, and that is the concept of justified truth claims and binary dualisms, and I'm not going to get into all of the philosophy that's in my dissertation, I promise. But in European philosophy, starting with the ancient Greeks, there was a taxonomy of reason, so we ranked our ideas of reason, that claimed that we could get to a pure understanding of the basis of what is true. And you had to justify that truth with arguments. Later, we came up with the idea that all ideas were either or, because if you can justify something as being pure and true, then there is only right and wrong. So you have to choose one or the other. The combination of these two ideas, or these two concepts, influenced by power and politics, control who is allowed to believe what and why, and that you have to choose sides. It's what makes us make stupid statements like, settling land claims means all non-Indigenous residents would lose their fee simple title to their land, and or forced displacement of non-Indigenous populations off of traditional territories. It's what drives that two-sided argument about climate change. And most dangerously, it drives the really damaging arguments about jobs versus the environment. That somehow trying to rethink our existence on the planet can't be done with care and attention in terms of the economy. All of this is happening at the same time as we have become both distracted and very positional about our politics. About our approaches to the economy, land use planning, medical care, human rights, pretty much any facet of our lives, you can get into an argument with somebody about something. I have a very dear friend I've known for 20 years. We worked together at KPMG when I was articling to become a chartered accountant in a past life. He was a couple years ahead of me, and he was my supervising staff accountant. And it's only now in our 40s that we realize that we are quite diametrically opposed on a lot of things politically. And as our friendship deepens and he says, describes himself as a Tea Party Republican, and I think you've never even lived in the US, why would you use those words to describe yourself? And I love him. He's one of my best friends. When I moved to Japan before seminary, he had power of attorney so he could deal with all my paying student loans and take care of things for me. So I sent him a cartoon that says, if you're ever lost in the woods, just start talking about politics, and you know at least one person will find you to come and pick a fight with you. But that's the problem. We are fighting instead of discussing. And we are fighting about things without seeing how they fit into the wider systems of how we live. And we are fighting in unnuanced ways. There's another great cartoon I saw the other day. It's got a friendly, happy little mouse labeled carbon tax, and a terrified politician, let's call him Andrew, posed to swat fiercely with a broom. And over him in the background, there is a giant, evil, larger-than-life rat that towers over him, poised to pounce. And on that rat, it says climate change. Just so that it doesn't appear that I'm picking on those to the right of the political spectrum, the left can be worse. There are now books being written about how the progressive left cannibalizes itself before it can even get to having discussions outside of its own political community. How often have we seen that play out in our churches? In the United Church especially, we talk about being welcoming to all, especially to those on the margins. But if you're a person who struggles with how to be inclusive to those on the margins, if you still have issues you need to work through on a personal level about gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, environmentalism, and racism, well, sadly, this denomination can become a very toxic and uncomfortable place very quickly. Because as humans in the 21st century, we are invested in being right. We are taught there is only right and wrong, or either or, and that is our biggest blind spot. We don't trust each other, and communication has broken down. We don't listen to each other, and when we do, we don't really hear each other. And we often miss the forest for the trees. And we make up lies about how important certain trees are. Take the economy, for example. We are taught in high school some basics about the capitalist economy, that it's driven by competition for scarce resources, that there is an opportunity cost to our actions, and that supply is driven by demand. But is supply driven by demand in the 21st century? I think it's pretty obvious by almost any measure that in fact we have grown into a world where the reverse is true and we still call it capitalism. We like to talk about the importance of unregulated markets because that demand is the free hand that's supposed to guide the production of goods and services. But in fact, we produce far more than we could ever really need. And then we manufacture desire and create demand to buy the supply. But we don't talk about that. We talk about the fact that a transition away from our dependence on fossil fuels will drive economic collapse. But in the US, whose economy is far greater than ours, green jobs, jobs that are good for the environment and the economy across all sectors, are outpacing economic growth and job creation. The fossil fuel industry is in decline and needs subsidies from the federal government. And this is happening in an America where Trump is doubling down on coal, but we don't hear about that growth. We need to become more thoughtful, nuanced, and kind in our discussion about the best ways forward as humans. Our systems of thought of economy and the environment are exactly that, they are systems. Either or approaches to working together don't yield abundant life. They lead to breakdowns in community, breakdowns in communication, and breakdowns in the environment. They lead to oppression and marginalization. They lead to the crucifixion. Returning to Moltmann's theology of the crucifixion, when we fail to notice and address the marginalizations and oppressions that exist in our world, we ignore the crucified God. And we stay stuck in a place of fear, death, destruction, and brokenness. And yet we know through our faith and through happy moments of human history that another life is possible. A life inspired by the one who humbled himself to human experience to be in relationship with us and for us to be in relationship with us in a different way. And that life leads to hope and triumph. In your affirming process you're going through and in discerning how you are to be welcoming as a congregation, I wish you kindness. I wish you thoughtfulness. I wish you nuance. And I wish you curiosity. Question everything. I wish you balance and ways to strive to find the both and in every situation, instead of fighting about either ors, which is so often our human tendency. May it be so. Amen.